news from the Australian newspaper. The number one tennis writer for that organisation. He's the number one football writer for that organisation as well. In fact, he's the number one sports writer, basically. He's doing everything these days for the Australian newspaper. And he is our Tuesday hack, as he always is on a Tuesday morning here on RSN Central. And boy, there's plenty happening too in the sport of tennis. 0416905052 to join our conversation. Courtney, good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning, Gareth. You're looking a little more fresh and relaxed than
yes.
I am. And I've got to say, if I'm feeling tired, I suspect that those who are running the Australian Open are completely knackered, because I think that I doubt they've had any sleep for days. Craig Tiley looks like he's aged about 10 years in a week. It's been a lot of discussion, as we know.
We talked about this last week, and we understand why that they want this tennis tournament to happen here. It's such an important tournament, sporting event, not only here in Melbourne, but for this country. But there was always going to be this backlash. There were going to be people that are unhappy that this tennis tournament's happening because families couldn't connect because they were based in New South Wales or Brisbane. There's Australians that can't get back into this country. And these tennis players have been able to waltz in, quarantine, and play in a tennis tournament. So it was going to be a difficult PR battle to win. Do you think right now, if you were having a beer with Craig Tilley and he was talking to you off the record, and even Martin Pakula, our sports minister here, do you think that they would be regretting their decision to go ahead with this tournament?
I don't think the Australian Open or Craig Tilley would be regretting the decision.
No.
Because, look, there's very good reasons for it to go ahead. If it doesn't go ahead, it would cause a significant impact in terms of funding next year for the entirety of tennis around the country. We're talking all the state bodies. There'd be significant job losses, you know, carnage, basically, in the industry.
Yeah.
So, no, I think that they've done everything they possibly can. As it is, they're still digging deep into, you know, $80 million reserves. They have had to source another $40 million, at least, in terms of funding, to try and make this go ahead. But there's good reason, similar to the AFL going to secure the $1 billion in funding at the start of that season. Get it going ahead. You get the money trickling in from sponsors. You ensure the presence. So, no, I'm certain that no matter the cost, no matter the price.
Or the headaches.
Or the headaches, and there's been headaches. Absolutely worth it going ahead. The Victorian government, it's an interesting one because there's been undoubtedly, and the federal government as well, we shouldn't forget, it's both parties. Mm-hmm. Had to tick off on the grim.
It's not so just Victoria, it's South Australia as well.
South Australia as well.
Yeah.
It's funny, in South Australia, I don't think there's been any backlash at all. I don't think there's any issues at all. But that's partly, you know, it's an interesting one. I think the timing is everything. When the decisions were made 6 weeks ago, Victorians weren't stuck interstate in red zones in Queensland or in Sydney. Obviously, there were still Australians overseas, but they weren't. You know, that's been an issue, and that's fairly, you know, maybe they should have done the rescue flights, but just the perception looks bad, absolutely. Maybe they're regretting it, but maybe you get through this fortnight, Gareth. Australians are coming back. You've got 3 weeks of good tennis, and the event goes smoothly. It could be, it's all up in the air at the moment.
It's a difficult one. I've always said, and I've voiced my opinion on this show with you, that I didn't think, as a Victorian, after what we went through, lockdown for months and then the difficulty of moving around this country, what we've taken for granted for us Victorians, like locked out of WA. If we went to Brisbane, we were locked out of our own state. I had friends and family that were based in New South Wales as well. It's difficult, this COVID situation, and you can understand how some Victorians are a little bit nervous that these tennis players have arrived, and when they've got Novak Djokovic in the back of your mind, what he did, of course, in the middle part of the year, whether they don't understand what we've been through with the lockdown and all that, and with the hotel quarantine, how that's been buggered up a few times here in this state, that there is a chance that this virus gets back out into the community. And everybody's a little bit nervous and a little bit scared at the moment, because it would be one hell of a battle for us to go through it all again.
It would be awful, and absolutely understand that viewpoint. And it's such a fickle beast, well, this virus, that you know, clearly it finds a way
I wonder to
wreak havoc, as we've seen.
I wonder what the other sporting codes, especially the national-based sporting codes, are thinking at the moment with these international players coming. Like, if it does get out, and hopefully it won't, and I think they'll do everything that they possibly can and put all of their resources into making sure that hotel quarantine is at its tightest. But it could affect the ramifications for the AFL, the NBL, the A-League, the NRL.
You can absolutely guarantee, Gareth, that the AFL and the NRL
would not want this happening.
No, they want it to happen. And want it to happen successfully is my, yep, would be my assessment, because if they can make it work successfully, if you can get up to 65% of crowd capacity, as Craig, yep, Tiley said they were working towards for the Australian Open, which would be... Now, I mean, look, I think there's a natural curtailment in terms of that holidays are over, etc. But if you can get 500,000 through the gates of Melbourne Park, mm-hmm, through the next fortnight, that's got to bode well for the opening week of the football in terms of the MCG. If they say they got to 60,000, 65,000. So I think they absolutely want it all to get succeed. Don't forget that they all work together. Like, they're all combined in terms of a sporting organisation. I know that there's been great rivalries between them, but over the last year, there's been a lot of information shedding. Tiley actually heads that sporting body of chief, yep, executive. So there's been a lot of information swapping. Of course, like everyone else, you just do not want it back.
No.
And if we think it's been a storm over the last few days, if the virus seeped from a player, well, actually, let's clarify. I'm not so certain there is a player that's tested a positive,
okay,
yet. It was certainly, look, Brett Sutton certainly mentioned yesterday there was a player that had tested positive. I think that may be not necessarily on the money.
Okay. Which is interesting. You would imagine
it's possible that it was a player that had been shedding, if that makes sense. Yep. One of those shedding situations which happened with Tennis Sanger, mm-hmm, and the American who was allowed to come. Those that have tested positive so far have been two coaches, broadcast, a couple of stewards. There were some scenes overseas which I think were not ideal. You did see some players on planes, you know, without masks. You saw Bianca Andreescu, whose coach did test positive, at a couple of restaurants, at different things like that, and she hadn't played the initial events. So I think they're concerning. But then again, she wasn't involved in the other tournaments, no, in the lead-in. The other thing is Djokovic obviously copped a massive, massive, massive backlash yesterday. And I've been on the record of being very critical of Novak in certain things, but I've written a piece today defending...
You defended him, which surprised me a little bit with your commentary on Novak before, but I read your article and it makes a lot of sense. What else is the players? He's got to defend his players, doesn't he?
Yeah. And it's one of those ones where, for him, he's living a pretty good life in Adelaide. He's got a balcony. They've got a gym. And this is part of the thing about the unfairness or inequity in terms of tennis players. The very best have actually got it pretty good in Adelaide. They've got a gym on site. They can practice. They've got a room with a balcony. So they're getting better looked after than what some of the players here. So Novak, to be fair, he didn't have to go out on a limb and say, for the betterment of the rest of my body, apart from the fact that he does head this new players' union. So of course he has to make these demands. Mm. Well, or as Craig Tiley has said today, they weren't demands. They were requests. They were just, you know, can we do this? Can we do that? Is it possible to do this? I made clear my views on some of his antics. I think, you know, the vaccination viewpoints are reprehensible and dangerous.
Astonishing, really.
The Adria tour, which was in, you know, to take tennis back to Serbia, to Croatia, also a charity fundraiser. Started with good intentions, but it became an absolute disaster. A public relations debacle, you know, super spreader. And then you have players partying shirtless in nightclubs. Understandably, Australians and Victorians are nervous. But, you know, but his role is to stand up for the playing cohort. So if you're Scott Morrison, if you were Anthony Albanese, if you were Dan Andrews, Michael O'Brien, if you head up a business lobbying group, if you're Setka heading up the unions here, you have to stand up for your members, what their members believe. There's no doubt that the players, some of them are confused, now rightly or wrongly, if they haven't didn't realise that this is a possibility, but they're confused and angry. It's up to you, the leader, to actually go and make a presentation on their behalf. He'll cop the backlash, and yeah, he's absolutely cop the backlash, and that's something that a leader does cop as well. But I do, you know, in this circumstance, I'm not so certain he's the villain.
No.
And nor are the players, I mean, the players, to be fair, what do? They signed up to come, brought over here. It's not like they're the ones that so no. the Australians can't come home or Victorians can't come from interstate. The perception absolutely looks fraught.
The concerning part about Novak's commentary with COVID, I don't think he actually believes in COVID-19.
Well, he's had it. He should.
Yeah. But he believes that, like, it's an overreaction, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, you can believe that, Novak, but you're in our country. And whether you believe it's an overreaction or not, our government doesn't. So the consequences for people catching COVID, and if the virus spreads, the consequences are that we have to stay inside, regardless if we believe in it or not. And that's annoying. And that's frustrating. And that affects our livelihoods and it affects jobs. So that's what people, whether you believe it or not, it's what the government believes in, and they make up the rules.
Oh, you get no argument from me, yeah, in terms of I am very much backing the science and understand what's happening around the rest of the world. And, you know, you do not want that sort of situation happening. But now, it's an interesting one.
So when we have a look at the market, and I wanted to get your thoughts on this and your insight, and I think we can make some money in a way, or when you think about the Australian Open as well and you analyse what plays are going on, do you think that the plays that are in Adelaide have the advantage over the plays based here in Melbourne? And who are the plays based in Adelaide?
I think some of the players, not necessarily, so I think there's a few ways to frame this.
Yeah.
Peter Johnson, I know, who was on the morning program yesterday here, great fella, mm-hmm, nice lefty, former doubles, circuit player. Mm-hmm. He made the point that the Australians should really be making hay at the moment. So you've got Ash Barty, who did beat the border rush. She raced down, you know, was able to get here before the borders to Queensland closed. So she's out practicing, living a normal life. Yeah, the one caveat there is she hasn't played a match in 12 months, so she needs to get a win under her belt. That's why she's keen to get to Adelaide to play at least one match in that exhibition. Dimonor comes off a tour win. Now, to borrow from Paul McNamee, the former Aussie Open tournament director, he was saying to me yesterday, if they've got 2 hours out of their hotel room to hit, another 90 minutes to work on strength and conditioning, really, you're not going to want to do much more than that. So the players that are in the five-hour window and the Australians who are out should be very well favoured, as should the ones in Adelaide who have got it slightly easier. The ones, now, and this has been challenged, it was challenged by McNamee strongly yesterday, I called the Australian Open the Asterix Open because you've got sort of 72 players in quarantine. Hmm. Those, I think, are very much at a disadvantage. If you're not allowed to train for 2 weeks or not able to get outside and train, there's got to be a physical impact of some sort. There's also your timing impact. Now, you can get it back. But confidence-wise, if you know your opponent's been hitting for 2 weeks, and there's in a lot of these matches, Gareth, there's only two or three points that actually separate separate them even from the best of the rest. If you know your opponent's been hitting for 2 weeks and you haven't been, there's got to be a psychological impact there. So I would be thinking that people like Kennan, as feisty as she is, the reigning champion, or Andreescu, Sabalenka, Azarenka, Angelique Kerber, you know, some top-line players and top contenders.
Million to one.
I'd be putting the line through them. And if they can overcome it,
unbelievable,
it is a remarkable win. So I'd be having the Australians and those that are practicing absolutely in contention.
I agree with McNamee in a way that it has to have an asterisk. And people thought
He said it doesn't. I was the one who made the argument.
Oh, did you? He doesn't.
He doesn't think it should.
Why?
Well, his points are that, and he was fairly vehement, and his points are, well, hang on, Ash Barty didn't go to the US Open or the French Open. Roger Federer didn't go to either of those events. He said there's always tournaments where players are injured or players miss or players arrive not prepared. Look, he did accept that this is six dozen players. Of that, probably 40 are singles players. We shouldn't forget that, and of those, 20 are lucky losers or qualifiers. So it's not quite as broad a group that are actually contenders, but if you've got contenders having a different preparation, I think it has to be a question anyway.
Yeah, unbelievable. So it's going to be a fascinating tournament. There's no doubt about that. Is Novak still the player to beat?
The one thing we know about Novak is when his back is against the wall or when people are up in arms against him or if he's caused a controversy, his form is pretty good afterwards. He seems to revel in that me against the world situation. He would have seen the back pages of the West Australian, the front pages of the Herald Sun. He'd be aware of the backlash.
Mm-hmm.
and he tends to play pretty well when he's backs against the wall.
And you can't tell me they're not watching the nightly news, these tennis players in lockdown. Nothing else to do, and they want to see what's happening. So,
if only to catch up with Bernard Tomic and his partner.
Like Kyrgios was. What do you think of Kyrgios's tweet the other day? He was. We'll get your thoughts on Kyrgios's tweet, and I'll mention what he said. They have had probably tours before where they've put up the white flag, but this series they've had a lot of adversity. Players injured. They're fielding probably their third best lineup. Regarding especially their bowling attack. They've lost Kohli after that first test when they were knocked over for 36, but somehow they found a way in Melbourne. They found a way to save that test in Sydney. They've had the rain that's helped them out a little bit at the moment, but boy, they're a tough, resilient side.
And it's often one of those situations where you always hear it coaches say, well, when one goes down, it opens an opportunity for others to flourish. We've seen that absolutely with Siraj. Mm-hmm. We've seen, I think, in the captaincy as well, after Kohli departed the shores, they seem to have been fairly tactically astute. And even in this test, we've seen Washington play a blinder, I believe. It's been great. Gill's been really good as an opener. They've certainly flourished. You can argue the toss, should Australia have knocked them over last week in Sydney? Probably. But then again, who could have thought Adelaide, when India were within range of a victory in the last day, to get bowled out for 36. It's sort of a staggering turnaround. So 1-1 is probably where it should be. Amazing that it comes down to the last day.
Having a look at Nick, this is the tweet about Nick Kyrgios. So this is what Nick Kyrgios tweeted there yesterday. There was the Channel 7 news story that was put up on social media, and he quoted saying, "Djokovic is a tool. I don't mind Bernie, but his missus obviously has no perspective. Ridiculous scenes." And he was praised like an Australian hero after that tweet on social media.
Well, I suppose it's two people that you're absolutely guaranteed are going to get most of the public behind if you're having a crack at Djokovic and having a crack at Bernie. Admittedly, as you said, it was more directed towards Bernard's partner. One thing I will say with Nick is that he has made these comments before. It's scarcely the first time that he's had a crack at Djokovic. They've got long running.
They don't like each other.
They do not like each other in any way, shape, or form. The other thing I would say with Bernie, they did have a bit of a falling out, but they're back together. I mean, Bernie will undoubtedly, people look at Bernie and shake their heads and go on. If you do come across Bernie in some circumstances, he's actually pretty amiable. It's not, for all his, and he's broken the law. Like, he's done some bad things. You come across him, he can be fairly amiable. Not that I would ever condone what he's doing. I will say this about him, though. His back's against the wall. He's shown enough fortitude to try and go and qualify. Back to the back blocks, go and pick up your own tennis balls from behind the court. At 28, he's a former Wimbledon quarter finalist, and he's out doing the hard yards on the back courts. For everything that you can question about him, at least he's having a crack doing that. And he did spend 8 hours on the court last week in 3 successive days. Was able to get through. I think the draw was possibly a little fortunate for him, and he got lucky in a couple of those matches, but he got through. Now, if he's able to get through to the Australian Open and try and qualify and gets a reasonable draw, he might yet win a match or two. So, you can look at these things in a couple of different ways. No doubt he's done some bad things, and people will hate him in Australia, absolutely, but he's out there having a crack. I don't think that he should be criticised for that.
Kyrgios hasn't played for a long time. Can he feature?
He is someone that does play very well fresh.
He'd be loving if Tilly... There's a little bit of pressure, but he's said in the media recently that they will continue the traditional Grand Slam scoring process, men best of 5, women best of 3.
Yeah.
Because of some of the build-up, of course, there was some suggesting, I think, in the tennis world that they should maybe do a best of 3 for both the men and the women. If it's best of 3 for the men, it suits Kyrgios, doesn't it?
It would absolutely suit Kyrgios. Yep. Look, I mean, there's been those...
It won't happen, but will it?
It absolutely won't happen. No. In fact, it was... And Craig Tiley made it very clear this morning that it would not happen. it just won't. It won't happen. And look, there's reasons for it as well.
Yep.
Broadcasters, the longer the match, more ads, more eyeballs.
Yep.
I mean, the other argument would be you shorten it and you get more matches played, but no, I think Tiley said it just won't happen. So for Kyrgios, can he feature? I think he can certainly if he gets a win or two under his belt in the first week. So he doesn't play for Australia in the ATP Cup, which I think is a shame because Nick tends to love that environment and thrive in that environment. I think that will hurt him a little bit because he's not the number, he's the number three in the country now. Milman jumped over him while Nick was, you know, opted against travelling, and I don't blame him for not travelling. But no, I think he's certainly capable of making a run to the second week. And if he's fresh and fit, you never know.
Yep.
This is one where I think he's certainly capable of going deep.
Having a look at the tennis markets, okay, for the men and the women for the Australian Open, Naomi Osaka at $6, Ashley Barty at $8.50, Harlop at $10, but we've put a line through her, haven't we? No, Harlop, she's not in Adelaide. Quarantine. She's in Adelaide. Serena Williams at $11. Is there any value there with some of the big guns?
Well,
Sabalenka at $9.
What that market tells us is that it's a very...
You don't know.
It's a very open market. But what you can do is say... So Sabalenka was outstanding in Abu Dhabi, in the Middle East, in the first week. She won that event. She's always started those sort of... She started really well in China a couple of weeks ago. Comes and looks like a world beater. But my I suppose until they actually do it properly at major level, I wouldn't back them. And she's yet to really deliver that at major level. She's played some great matches in Melbourne, but she hasn't, including against Barty, but she hasn't got through deep. So the fact she's also in that harsh fortnight-long quarantine, for me, that's an out. But you have got Osaka, Halep, and Williams in Adelaide in the favourable situations, and you've got Barty training in Melbourne at Kooyong or at Xavier College, now that Melbourne Park's been shut off because obviously you can't have Australian players mixing with those that are coming in quarantine. So I would have those very much in the mix. And then in the next line of betting, well, Azarenka's in quarantine, Kennan's in quarantine. You know, I think you can sort of bring it down to a pool of four, or, you know, four or five. And given the odds, if there's one you like, I mean, $6 for Osaka, who I think when she's on is proven exceptionally hard to beat. $6 is value. And if you do think that Serena's got one more in her, let's see, you don't often get $11 about Serena Williams.
So you can box those up. So you've got Osaka, Williams, Barty, Harlop. You can nearly work out a staking plan where you can make some money, profit there regarding those four players. On the men's side of the draw, there's not much. Well, the favourites are a lot shorter in this market. Nadal at 220 leads the market over Djokovic at 325, Dominic Thiem at $5, Medvedev at 17, Tsitsipas at 17. I don't know why Roger's in the market, unless he pulls off a miracle and arrives here, and Zverev at 20-1.
I think if you look at the top four, I would be, and if you think Novak won't win,
Nadal wins.
Team was so good here last year in that final, you know, and I think he was very unlucky. I think it was a questionable timeout from Novak that changed the momentum of the match. It significantly changed the momentum of the final. You then see him go to Paris where he, again, Rafa on clay. Well, it's scarcely a bad beat if you can make it through to there. And then goes to the US Open and finally breaks through for a win at Grand Slam level. So that monkey's off his back. Then he goes to the Tour End finals in London with all of them and again makes it through to a final. He's very, very, very consistent, has shown that he loves these conditions. So I would be having, you know, if you think Novak's not going to win it, you can probably make some money on either team. And the one thing with Nadal, he's only won it once here.
Yeah.
He's made finals a lot, and those that have beaten him are
been some
legends.
Wonderful matches, yeah.
So it's not like he's far away, but it is worth noting he's only won it once and he's been coming for 15, 16 years.
All right, then. I love Thiem. I think he's knocking on the door of really taking that next step and challenging Nadal in Paris. And hopefully that hard court probably suits him conditions-wise. I think the Australian hard court season or the surface there at Melbourne Park will be right up his alley.
Yep, I think his form over the last 18 months to 2 years on hard court, what he's done, Gareth, he's taken the step from being an unbelievably good clay courter to now being an unbelievably good hard courter as well.
0416905052 to join our conversation here with the Tuesday Hacks here with Gareth Hall and Courtney Walsh. This is a good question coming through. Is Tennis Australia getting pressure from the ATP as China would be hungry for a Grand Slam?
It is a good question, and it's and look, we had the Premier say last Thursday that part of the reason for pushing ahead was that there would be threats from overseas. Now, I think that statement can be challenged in terms of the immediate threat, but no doubt China is hungry for a slam. Whether they would steal it, I think it's more likely there would be a fifth slam, Gareth, in sometime in the next decade, as opposed to China taking the Australian Open position, given the history of the competition. And there's a couple of factors at play here. Early in the 2000s, India was also after it. So we got two massive growing, emerging first world powers, basically, you know, from third world to first world powers in India and China, with an unbelievable amount of money to throw at them and huge populations. So they were certainly pressing for a Grand Slam, and Australia seemed to be the one, as it was in the 80s, that was perhaps the weakest. Yep. But the investment that they've made in Melbourne Park, there is still no other stadium in the world that's capable of doing what Melbourne Park is doing this time around. It's splitting the site into three different areas, each with an outstanding stadium. John Cain Arena, the formerly Hisense, or Melbourne Arena, Margaret Court in its own right, fantastic venue for concerts and also, you know, clearly a separate stadium court, and Rod Laver Arena, to be able to use them as three different, their own stadium courts, and then to split the rest of the site into three different areas. The infrastructure they've put in place there, the long-running contract, it's not likely that we'll lose an Australian Open. What, as I said, it's possible that there might be in years to come, they may think about having a fifth major somewhere.
This is the Tuesday Hacks with Courtney Walsh and Gareth Hall. Have you had a look at the Amazon documentaries regarding the AFL clubs that they filmed during COVID-19, a season that we won't forget in 2020?
No, I'm yet to see that. I actually had the email lob this morning. Yes. Yet to have a look. But I think, I can say, I'm sure we got edited out, but we were certainly at one stage on the Gold Coast after the home and away season had finished. Some of the journalists were invited to go to the Gold Coast Suns Football Club for a tour around, talk to Stuart Jude, talk to Mark Evans, talk to John Haynes, the football director, and they were filming. And so we're talking, we didn't realise, and there were some conversations going on at the time where we're filming. So I think it'll make for some fascinating insights into, you know, it's amazing. Adelaide, the club who had an absolute shocker, the first 10, 11 weeks there, you'd love to know what the morale's like. What happened at the Gold Coast when Matt Rowell went down after he was showing so much promise? The other clubs involved, the other people
Canelio,
it's a fascinating season as captain to then be dropped. It's, I think it'll be quite amazing, and I think the access was very, 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 very good in terms of being able to offer an insight.
And I think West Coast were part of that documentary as well. So the clubs that were on show were the Gold Coast Suns, the Giants, the Adelaide Football Crows. Club, and also the Eagles. Did I mention the Eagles?
The Eagles, you did, And we think with West Coast, you know, it all went wrong for them early in the season. Like, they really struggled. So there'll be some great insights, I think.
We might play a little bit, a snippet, a promo video for this documentary, thanks to Amazon, that will be released pretty shortly. It's not far away, but here's a trailer of it.
Footy is a never-ending journey. That's all-consuming.
The reality is, this season will not look like any other.
I just grew up on the game. You love something, don't know any different.
Sick and tired of dealing with racism that affects me personally.
He tweets that Nat Newick is lazy and unfit.
Is football what defines me?
We don't have family in Adelaide, so the football club has become our family.
It's not a win or loss. It's either a win or a learn.
I'm not going to play this way.
Once you know your purpose, you'll be unstoppable.
It's going to be tough, but it could be the best weeks of your life.
You going to miss me?
Yeah.
He kicks a goal! I got one! Show me the boy!
Families, friends and flags. It's all in.
So I think it's going to be exciting hearing from some of the best players in the competition and some of the individuals behind the football clubs. There was a quote there. Once you know your purpose, you're unstoppable. I think that comes from the Richmond mindset. So we get an insight behind the scenes from that Richmond Football Club. Tiger Woods' documentary the other day has been, you have to watch it. The Chicago Bulls documentary during the middle part of last year was a must watch as well. So for sporting fans, I'm loving what these documentaries are all about.
I mean, we've seen it before in different books, obviously, you know, people that are embedded with clubs being able to bring to light the events behind the scenes in great detail and great insight because they've been able to spend the time there. But to see it now in documentaries, to actually have the footage, it just elevates it so much, and I think it gives great insight into what actually goes on in the sporting world.
It would be great to have the cameras rolling in Djokovic's quarantine hub and following him around. Obviously, you wouldn't be able to do that with the COVID-19 restrictions, or is there something going on?
No, I'm just saying it'd be the first time that anyone would say it's great to see what happens in Adelaide.
Yes. Hey, Adelaide, they're lucky in a way too. We've got a lot of friends that listen to this show in Adelaide. I'm not going to go where you're going.
No, that's facetious. I do like Adelaide. But,
no, it is the most boring city in the country. Yeah. Benny Day saying the people from Adelaide are starting to ring in the city of churches. But the documentary in tennis, what player would you like? Would it be Kyrgios? Would it be Roger? Would it be Rafa? Would it be Novak?
Oh, look, I think we'd love to see the Kyrgios. And look, having been in a couple of, hotels, and you see some of the photos on front pages at different times. So I think Nick would be, I mean, imagine this, Nick plays his second round match at Wimbledon, has a tight win, heads up to the Wimbledon Village, starts buying shots and rounds for just random people in the bar like he did a couple of years ago. Nick, sitting at home bored in Melbourne, tweets something to someone saying, anyone up for some YouTube or some pizza, head rounds to a random person's house that he had no idea who they were, sits down on the couch and just starts playing computer games with him like he did years ago. And I suspect on the nightclub circuit, he'd be fairly dangerous.
Very interesting.
As well. Fairly dynamic as well outside.
He should really sign a reality TV contract at the moment. Just before we let you go, Walshy, cricket score 1 for 54. Punjara hanging tough at the moment. He's 6 from 41 balls not out. Gill 41 off 73. Starks bowling at the moment. There's 77 overs left basically for the Aussies to bowl out the Indians. But like we saw in Sydney, they do get tired towards the end of the day. They need to take some wickets, and wickets quickly, you would imagine, in the next hour or so.
And we shouldn't forget that, unlike in Sydney, where they'd had a decent break between the Melbourne and the Sydney test, they're backing up here. They got tired. They looked tired in the first innings as well. So I was staggered that India were able to hold on in Sydney. If they can do it again, fantastic. But I think they're more of a chance now of holding on, given they've shown such strong resistance.
You're a Ballarat boy. The Ballarat Trotting Club will celebrate their, I think it's their 150th running, or it's a milestone anyway. Great. Is it 50th? Could be the 50th of the Ballarat Trotting Cups.
Well, you lived in Ballarat for a while, and it's one of those ones where we always knew the Ballarat Trotting Cup was, just drew a massive audience to Barrow Raceway, in part because it's right in the centre of town. Dowling Forest is a little further out. It looks like a fascinating race. I think you would have had, was it David Moran on yesterday?
Yes.
Perhaps talking about whether Hurricane Harley would want to hold out Lochinvar Art over 2,700 metres. It's a big ask for Harley.
He probably does, but he gets crushed. Hurricane Harley. Lochinvar Art's probably nearly, he's one of the best, he's definitely the top three or four horses that I've ever seen in the sport of harness racing, from what I've seen him do on the racetrack a couple of times. So can't wait for that. He'll win, and doesn't really matter where he drew. He'll win on Saturday night. And his clashes with King of Swing in the Hunter Cup and Miracle Mile will be something else. Hey, Walshy, it's always a pleasure, mate. We'll catch up with you next Tuesday. There's plenty happening. Make sure you get some sleep.
Off to Bright this afternoon for a weekend magazine feature on Daisy Pearce, the champion Melbourne footballer. But I suspect I'll be pulling over at Wangaratta McDonald's to write about some quarantine antics.
All right, mate. Don't forget Uncle Marzi's multi today.
All over it.
Yeah, all right then. I'll read that out in just a moment. Good on you, Walshy.
Pleasure, guys.